Nick debated the sanity of interrupting him. He really wanted to, but there was an air about Ash that said he needed a few minutes to get a handle on everything. And that was something Nick understood better than anyone. There was nothing about his life that was simple or easy, and especially normal. Many days he had a hard time wrapping his own head around his reality. Finally, Asheron spoke again.
Why did you save Simi after what I did to you?
It was the right thing to do. She never hurt me. Not her fault her granddad's a jerk.
And my Aemon. You held him off you, but you never fought him.
Nick shrugged. He didn't insult my mama. I had no real discord with him. He glanced down at the wounds on his forearm. A few bites ain't nothing Witch Hazel won't fix. Didn't feel like kicking Lassie for his idiocy. Figured you probably do that enough for the both of us. No need to add to his misery. But, dude, really? You should buy him a toothbrush. Or Altoids, because, man, his breath is nasty.
And you're the Malachi.
His tone said that Ash couldn't reconcile any kind of compassion with Nick's DNA. Made sense. As a Malachi, he wasn't supposed to have any whatsoever. For anyone. But that had never been him. Nick Gaucher was a different kind of beast. Unique to himself. Nick grinned at the confused Atlantean. That's what everything that has attacked me has told me. I assume they can't all be lying. Hands on hips, Asheron let out a tired breath.
I'm going to be honest. My first inclination is to murder you where you stand.
Option B? Ash snorted at his sarcasm.
You helped my granddaughter. For that alone, I grant you a reprieve.
Gracias.
De nada.
Ash paused before he spoke again.
Actually, it is something. You are a threat to my family. Therefore, I only have one choice.
The deadly tone of his voice sent a chill down Nick's spine. And that is?
I have to get rid of you immediately.
And by the severe tone of his voice, Nick knew Asheron didn't mean he'd take him home. Ash was most likely going to kill him.
Chapter 12. 1 second, they were in Ash's study, and in the next, they were in the middle of a massive and impressive war zone. Beautiful winged soldiers battled Aemons in wolf form and hell monkeys. Axes and fire blasts mixed with snarls, hisses, and curses. But as soon as the winged soldiers saw Nick, they pulled back from the fighting to stare at him. Everything came to a sudden stop. Yeah, that was disturbing. It felt the same as standing naked in the gym in the middle of a pep rally. A tall, winged soldier who was dressed in reddish-gold armor approached them slowly. His pale blonde hair fell from under his helm to his shoulders. More than that, the soldier was pretty enough to make even the hottest swimsuit model turn green with envy.
So, Asheron, you've come to your senses.
He stopped abruptly, just like Cody had done when they tried to leave Karma's house. Touching the invisible force field, he glared at Ash.
What is this?
Ash answered his question with one of his own.
Why do you want this boy?
That is not your concern, Atlantean. Now hand him over. Or we'll tear this house down.
With a grim gleam in his eyes, Ash held his ground.
You're willing to go to war over a human?
A slow smile spread across the soldier's face.
Are you?
Nick held his breath as his life hung in the balance of this conversation. He had no idea why the winged soldiers wanted him, but he was pretty sure it wasn't to send him home with puppies, roses, and rainbows. The soldier glanced over his shoulder to the rest of his army and said something Nick couldn't translate. All of a sudden, they threw their arms out in unison and sent a sonic blast toward Ash and Nick. Nick expected it to rebound off the force field. It didn't. Rather, it sent both him and Ash reeling. Nick slammed against a wall with enough force to knock the air from his lungs. His back burned as his vision dimmed. Now that stung. The leader stepped over Ash's body and grabbed Nick by his arm and hauled him to his feet.
What are you?
Nick breathed.
Death.
Nick snorted at the arrogant tone. No offense, I've met the man, and he's a lot more badass than you.
Prettier, too.
Laughing, the soldier grabbed him by the throat and choked him.
Emeritus,
Asheron snarled as he rose slowly to his feet.
Let him go.
The soldier blasted Ash away while he increased the pressure on Nick's neck. Unable to breathe, Nick did his best to break Emeritat's hold. But there was nothing he could do. His face turned hot. His ears rang fiercely. Just as he started to black out, Emeritat went flying. An instant later, Asheron tossed Nick over his shoulder and teleported them out. Coughing and wheezing, Nick tried to focus his gaze as he found himself back in Asheron's study. Ash set him down on his feet, then stepped away. He gave a shaky laugh as he met Asheron's gaze.
Admit it, Ash. I'm too fluffy and adorable to kill.
He batted his eyelashes. For a second, he was sure Ash would take over where Emeritat had left off and choke the rest of the life out of him. Finally, Ash rolled his eyes and scoffed derisively.
When we get you back to your mother, you better hug her close and thank her.
Not that I don't always do that, but for what in specific?
The fact that I can't break her heart by doing what I'm sure would be the best thing for everyone, handing you over to them.
Nick drew a ragged breath through his sore throat.
We both thank you for your restraint.
Ash ignored the comment. I've never tried to send someone into an alternate universe before. Never mind, send them in and pull someone else out, but... Wait. Nick dodged Asheron's hand.
What?
My girlfriend's here, too. Ash gaped in disbelief.
How do you mean?
When Thorn attacked me, somehow I pulled her here. Kind of like saving Simi. No idea how it happened, it just did. Cursing under his breath, Ash glared at Nick.
Where is she?
She was at the convent where your hell monkeys found me. Pretty sure she's not there now, but that's just a guess. The expression on Ash's face said that he was about to follow through with his threat and return Nick to his enemies.
Is she human?
Kind of. Ash cursed again.
I know I don't want to ask this, but the compulsion's more than I can bear. What's kind of human?
Debating the sanity of answering, Nick decided that he owed some kind of explanation to Asheron for not allowing him to die at Emeritat's hand. But he had a bad feeling Ash wasn't going to like it.
She's a ghost.
Asheron scowled at him.
A ghost?
He nodded. Weird, right? But true nonetheless.
Can't I send you back and then you call her?
I'd rather you not, just in case I can't. No offense, but the whole girlfriend designation means I'm kind of attached to her and would be very put out if she didn't make it back, and I did.
What kind of idiot dates a ghost?
The expression on Ash's face said that he was about to send Nick back anyway, until his phone rang. He pulled it out of his pocket and checked the ID. After hesitating a few more seconds, he made a sound of supreme irritation before he finally answered it.
Savitar, it's been a while.
Grateful for the reprieve, Nick said a quiet prayer of thanks for Savitar's timing. And that new look Ash cast in his direction told him that he was the prime subject of their conversation. A conversation that was worsening whatever intestinal woe had besieged Asheron. Nick cupped his hands around his mouth.
Tell Sav I said hi.
Asheron narrowed his eyes in warning.
Yeah, I'll bring him to you.
He turned off the phone and grabbed Nick's arm. Before Nick could blink, they were back in the Burdett mansion. His mom and Bubba were sitting on the couch not far from Savitar, while Cody stood in one corner, chewing her thumbnail. A tall, blonde man Nick assumed to be Mark was next to her. The moment Cody saw him, she dropped her hand and gave him a smile that set fire to every male hormone in his body.
Oh, thank the gods!
She ran to him and hugged him close.
We've been worried sick.
Nick closed his eyes and inhaled the sweet scent of her hair. Yeah, okay, he'd take a beating and then some. For this. There really were no words for what he felt any time Cody was with him.
Girlfriend?
Asheron asked sarcastically. Nick grinned. You don't think I'd let just anyone molest me like this, do you?
Now I get it.
Ash mumbled as he and Savitar locked gazes. Something dark passed between them that said they had a bad history with each other. But what Nick didn't miss was the way Cody reacted as she realized Asheron was with him. It was subtle, just a tensing of her body, a flash of pained recognition in her eyes. Most people wouldn't have caught it at all, but Nick was attuned to every nuance of her. She knew Asheron. Well. Gently, Nick tilted her chin until she met his gaze.
What is it?
He whispered. Refusing to answer, she shook her head. Nothing. Yet he knew better. It was another secret she refused to share. Had she dated Asheron or something?
God, he hoped not. That would mess up his head even worse than Bubba dating his mama. Never mind the fact that the two of them were married in this realm. It was sick all the way around. Well,
Ash said to Nick,
now that you're reunited, let's get rid of you both.
Savitar snorted.
Won't work.
Asheron glared at Savitar.
What do you mean?
Savitar jerked his chin toward Nick.
He's been split. You can't send him home and bring the other kid back. How do you know?
How do you not know?
Savitar challenged Ash. Rolling his eyes, Asheron scoffed.
When was the last time you were right about anything? That's a cold, low blow.
When Ash started for Savitar, Cody broke them apart. The scowl returned to Ash's face as he stared down at her.
Do I know you?
Cody swallowed hard before she shook her head.
Please, don't fight.
Are you sure we don't know each other?
Nick held his breath, waiting for her to answer Ash's question. Clearing her throat, Cody glanced at Nick.
We've never met.
His lip curled. Savitar moved to stand by a wall. He crossed his arms over his chest before he sneered at Asheron.
A double transmutation through dimensions. Not even you can do that.
Ash gestured toward Nick.
If it's been done, it can be undone.
And we're not talking about turning iron into gold, O great alchemist Acheron, Savitar countered. We're transmuting two living creatures across dimensions simultaneously. I've never even heard of this being done, have you? Acheron didn't answer.
Well?
Savitar prompted.
Yes.
Acheron gestured at Nick and Cody.
How else did he get here?
Savitar let out an extremely rude noise that was followed by an even ruder gesture. Would Aralim have that power? Every eye in the room turned to Nick with an intensity so disturbing, he felt a sudden need to make sure his deodorant was still working. Cody frowned at him. How do you know that term? That intense look made him squirm even more. We ran into them earlier?
What?
She gasped. Her face went white.
They attacked my home and stabbed my granddaughter.
Cody gasped at Acheron's news, and she paled even more.
Mia was hurt? Is she all right?
Acheron slid a scowl toward Savitar that questioned Cody's sanity.
Who's Mia?
Your granddaughter.
I thought you didn't know Ash, Nick asked, interrupting them.
Cody stepped away from him.
My granddaughter is Simi.
Cody pressed her hands to her face.
Sorry, I keep forgetting that everything's so different here.
She glanced back at Acheron.
Is she all right?
Ash jerked his chin at Nick.
He saved her. Healed her. Somehow.
Nick held his hands up as Cody turned to him for an explanation. Don't ask. Don't know. Still have no known powers here. But there is something that I learned even more interesting than my would-not-be powers. Ash has a living Karanti. Now it was Acheron's turn to squirm under their scrutiny. Incredulous, Savitar pushed himself away from the wall.
I thought they were all dead.
A tick started in Ash's jaw before he spoke.
I still have Zarina.
Savitar's expression darkened.
Why didn't you tell me? I never intended for anyone to know she survived. I swore to protect her, and I will. She and my grandchildren are in a location where no one can reach them. Not even you.
Ash turned back toward Nick and Cody.
But one Karanti is nothing against an entire Aralim battalion.
Who led them? Cody asked.
Ameritot.
Pressing the back of her hand to her lips, Cody moved away from them. Now there was an expression Nick was more than familiar with.
You know him,
Nick said, as a statement and not a question. To his complete shock, she nodded. Wow, she could actually answer a question without hedging. That was a miracle.
Or rather, I know the one in our time. He's brutal, but under the command of others.
Ours wouldn't have attacked on his own, but this one... She met Acheron's gaze.
What did he want?
Ash pointed to Nick.
Your boyfriend. Hog-tied and delivered.
And they attacked you in your own home and assaulted an innocent.
Her voice was scarcely more than a whisper.
This is so bad.
Nick closed the distance between them.
What?
Biting her lip, she looked up at him. The fear in her eyes made his gut tighten. He couldn't stand for her to be hurt or afraid of anything, especially not of him.
I think I know what happened. When I failed to kill you, Sarosha and the others must have banded together to split you in half in your time period.
Even as a fledgling Malachi, you were too powerful for them to take on. It's why they sent me to your predecessors first. They were hoping to prevent your birth. She laid her hand against his cheek. You truly have no idea just how powerful you will be in only a handful of years. How deadly and cruel the Ambrose Malachi is. And when we bound your powers to prevent that, they must have used the opportunity to do this.
Savitar gestured at Nick.
But how?
Shrugging, she dropped her hand from his face.
They're the keepers of time and order. I'm assuming that as they've sent me from time period to battle his forefathers, they could have moved Nick's soul to this one without his body. It's the only thing that makes sense.
So, how do we get them to undo this? Nick asked.
They won't.
Cody pressed her lips together. But let me contact them and see if I can find out anything more. If I can learn how they did it, we should be able to undo it. Nick inclined his head to her. Cody went to Ash.
Can you take me to your house so that I can teleport from there?
Nick didn't like the sound of that. Why did she want to be alone with Asheron? Why not here?
She glanced back at him. They want you, Nick. Apparently, at any cost. I don't want them to use me as a locator and then attack all of you here. Let me go where I know they can't use me to trace you.
She turned to Ash.
I'm assuming your house is shielded?
Yeah. I still haven't figured out how they got in to attack us.
Cody knew.
But it was a secret she had no intention of sharing with anyone, even her uncle. She was in enough trouble with her people already. No need in worsening it. When she started to leave, Nick stopped her.
Be careful. You too.
She kissed his cheek, then allowed Asheron to teleport them to his home. As soon as they were in the grand foyer, Ash pinned her with a gimlet stare that was so similar to the one her father used whenever he was angry. Pain flooded her with that memory, and Ash gave her no reprieve.
You were lying earlier. You do know me, don't you?
Against her will, tears filled her eyes and tightened her throat. I do, and I don't.
What do you mean?
A sad smile toyed at the edges of her lips as she ached to hug him. He looked so much like her father that it was hard to be with him and deal with the savage grief that wanted to send her to her knees. She would give anything to have 1 minute with her father again. Just one. You're my uncle, Asheron. But I never really met you in my mortal lifetime.
Asheron stepped back with a curse.
You're lying.
No, truth. My father is your twin brother, Styx.
One stray tear fell and she quickly wiped it away.
In my world, you and my father went out to fight together and you never returned from battle.
I was killed?
She shook her head. Frozen with Impsny and carried off so that no one could reach you. My father spent the rest of his life searching, trying his best to set you free.
He scowled at her.
Styx?
He asked incredulously.
My brother fought for me and tried to free me?
My father loved you dearly. Always.
In her world, she would never dare tell this to Asheron, where it might change the future, but here, everything was so different. His knowledge or lack thereof couldn't change anything in her world. Not to mention, Asheron knew the dangers of changing anything. He would die before he altered time in any dimension.
I don't know if you and my father are enemies here or not, but in my dimension, my father would still be held on the Vanishing Isle in Hades' domain by Artemis. Eventually, the two of you become friends again and forge an unbreakable bond of brotherhood. Before my birth, you two are best friends.
He shook his head as if he couldn't believe her story. That's not possible. My wife killed my brother centuries ago.
Cody scowled at the impossible. No, she couldn't have. So long as you live, my father lives. Your life forces were bonded together by your mother. He can only die if you do. It's how the Malachi finally kills my father and breaks his army. Once the Malachi realizes the truth of your bond, he reanimates you and kills you both.
The Malachi kills us.
She nodded. But that's the history of my world, not the one here. Maybe here, Apollomene failed to combine your life forces? He paused to think about it before he answered.
No. We were bound at birth to protect me from harm.
He winced as if a bad memory went through him.
Maybe Artemis didn't kill him after all. I can see her imprisoning him and then calling it death to protect me. She was always precious that way.
Now it was her turn to be stunned. Aunt Artie is your wife?
Was. Yes.
Still, she couldn't grasp it, not given what she knew of their past. Aunt Artie.
Why do you keep saying it like that? We loved each other more than anything. I can't imagine we could be different in your world.
Oh, she could. But that was her dimension and time. No need in ruining his memories of her aunt here. Never mind. It doesn't matter. Cody offered him a bittersweet smile, even while she ached inside. What she really wanted to do was have him hold her, like her father had once done. Have him tell her that everything would be okay. But that would never happen again. I want you back, Daddy. But Asheron wasn't her father, and this would be infinitely easier if he wore his hair black in this universe, as he did in hers. Blonde Asheron? That hit too close to home. Not wanting to hurt anymore over memories she couldn't change, she needed to put distance between them before she said or did something even more stupid. I'll be right back with information. Closing her eyes, she summoned her powers and used them to teleport to the realm where the Aurelim had built their fortress and homes long ago. Existing outside of human time and space, so that it didn't matter what dimension she accessed it from, theirs was a sterile and austere place. The Aurelim, as a rule, were very circumspect and puritanical. They never met a rule they didn't embrace wholeheartedly. Because of that, she rarely ever came here to check in. Usually her contact found her on the mortal plane, where she worked to thwart the Malachi bloodline. And mostly at the worst possible times. With a deep breath for courage, she walked to the Grand Hall, where their commanders often gathered to exchange information or socialize. Today it was eerily empty. Only the lights from the winged torchieres that lined the walls burned. The fire made a light hissing noise and left a scent of cinnamon in the air. She moved to the center of the vibrant white room and braced herself for the worst news.
Srosha?
She called, summoning the Arel who was her direct contact. He appeared instantly, dressed in his battle armor. Extremely tall, blonde, and beautiful, he dwarfed her with his massive girth and height.
So, you finally remembered your station and duties. I have to say, I never expected to see you again.
The accusation
and anger in his tone surprised her. While she'd known he wouldn't be pleased that she hadn't killed Nick yet, she hadn't anticipated this much hostility. What do you mean?
You failed to complete your mission. Again.
He spat those words at her as if they left a bitter taste in his mouth.
I do believe that I instructed you to destroy the Ambrose Malachi.
No, you ordered me to murder Nick O'Shea. He isn't Ambrose. At least, not yet. He rolled his eyes at her.
You disgust me. You and that bleeding heart that sees lies instead of truth. You were given a direct order. You failed, and now?
His scowl deepened, as if he had another thought.
Why are you here?
Something wasn't right about this. For that matter, something wasn't right about him. Everything was off, and every sense she possessed rang out with warning. Cody glanced around to see faint burn marks on the wall. Several of the chairs were missing, and one window had been broken. Even though it was forbidden by their ancient laws, it was obvious someone had fought in here. Fiercely. What happened?
That doesn't concern you.
She looked over her shoulder as she felt someone approaching her from behind. It was Ameritot, and another Arel, whose name she didn't know. When they reached for her, she twirled away from them. What's going on? She demanded. Srausha curled his lip.
You're being decommissioned, Nakoda.
Her eyes widened at his declaration. What he meant was executed. Why?
Insubordination. Refusal of orders. You have put our enemy's life above that of the entire world.
She shook her head in denial. He couldn't issue that order alone. Not even he had that kind of power among their ranks. At least 5 Arlim had to agree for a death warrant to be issued on their own kind. Where's Adidiron or Suriel?
They won't save you. They can't.
He jerked his chin at Ameritot.
Take her and show her how we treat traitors.
Chapter 13. Cody dodged Ameritot's arms. She tried to teleport out, but couldn't. With no other course of action, she ran for the doors. They threw fireballs to stop her retreat, some of which came so close they singed her arm. She dodged them as best she could and summoned her armor for protection. Thankfully, that part of her powers still worked. If only the power to teleport out would operate too, that would be just tasty perfect. But no matter how hard she tried, she couldn't escape here. Twisting and dodging, she made it across the room and headed for the main doors. With no clear-cut plan or destination, she'd almost reached them when someone grabbed her from behind, threw her through them, and held her in his muscular arms as he dragged her into a small hidden alcove in the marble foyer. Her scream and squirms were cut short as the one holding her put his hand over her mouth and whispered in her ear while Srausha and Ameritot continued to hunt her.
Shh!
It was Suriel.
Stop struggling. I'm here to help, I swear.
He loosened his hold. Still, her heart pounded so hard that she was surprised it remained in her chest. Relaxing a small bit, she allowed him to carry her away from the ones who searched for her. She expected him to take her to one of their modest-sized homes that had been placed on the hill around the hall. Instead, he took her to a dark underground shelter where Adidiron and a small handful of others waited. Everyone was dressed for battle, and some of them were bleeding from fresh wounds. That explained the damage in the room she'd just left. They must have fought each other mercilessly. Suriel released her and stepped back to give her a little space. Turning around to scan each Arel there, Cody frowned at the group. Ragged defeat and daunted determination burned in their eyes as they watched her warily, as if she'd turn on them too. "What is this?" she asked. His gaze even more troubled than the others, Suriel sighed.
"Sadly, the small number of Aralim who oppose tyranny and stupidity."
That made no sense to her whatsoever.
"What?"
With his blonde hair braided down his back, something he only did for battle, Adidaron stepped forward, out of the shadows. His beautiful face now had a fresh, healing scar running down the left side, from hairline to chin.
"After the senior Malachi was killed last night and his powers drained, Ameritat and Srosha took it upon themselves to stop the Malachi bloodline. Forever."
Suriel gave a solemn nod in accordance.
"They think that if they kill the younger Malachi, they can reset order and bring about the Sada."
Cody's frown deepened at his words. The Sada was said to be the time of innocence and purity, a utopian world where all evil was vanquished and only good survived. In theory, it was a great thought, but in reality,
"It's a myth," she said. "Sada upsets the necessary balance. If you do that, it will destroy the entire universe."
A universe that hinged on an ever-shifting balance and harmony with all things, even good and evil. Adidaron snorted.
"You know that, and we know that, but they don't believe it. Or worse, some of them do, but since they know the world will end by the fledgling Malachi's hand, they're willing to cut the deadline short and let it perish under their kinder, gentler destruction now."
But that made no sense. Her jaw went slack. "You're kidding me." Even as the words left her mouth, she knew she was being rhetorical. She'd seen the madness in Sorosha's eyes herself. For whatever reason, he wanted Nick's throat, and he wasn't going to let anything, even world destruction, stop him from getting it. "Why have they done this?" A ferocious tick started in Suriel's sculpted jaw.
"Simple. When you bound Nick's powers, you provided them the perfect opportunity to kill him while he's too weak to stop them or protect himself. Right now, they don't need you to do it. They're more than capable and willing to end him."
Sick to her stomach, she struggled to breathe. "What have I done?" By trying to save Nick, she'd handed his head to his enemies on a platter. Adidaron put his hand on her shoulder to steady her.
"Your job."
He tightened his grip.
"You've done nothing wrong, little sister. The sin is on their heads. They are the ones seeking salvation through destruction."
"As so many do." Cody squeezed her eyes shut as the horror of it all racked her, and she tried to come to terms with her own part in this wretched play.
"We can't let them destroy everything. What do we do now? This is awful."
Adidaron patted her shoulder before he stepped away to pace among their small group.
"No, Nicola. It's prophecy. We've always known this day would come. We just didn't know when or how."
She arched a brow at something no one had told her.
"How you mean?"
Suriel picked up the explanation.
"In the Mashuan, it is written that the last Malachi would bring about the downfall of the Aralim."
Adidaron inclined his head to Suriel.
"We always assumed the Malachi would defeat us in battle at the end time.
Now we know better."
Suriel folded his hands behind his back as he paced in an opposite direction.
For the first time since the Primus Bellum, we're divided against ourselves. Our order is split and in chaos. Our brethren have become our enemies. Because of the Mashuani,
Cody breathed as she finally understood what they were telling her. The Mashuan was the tablet of fated destiny, while the Mashuani was the tablet of prophecy. Twin documents that had been written by the original gods eons ago when the world was brand new. The Mashuan told what was destined to happen. The other foretold ways to accomplish or divert the Mashuan. It was the tablet of what could be. And it had been written on the Mashuani tablet that a Malachi would be born who could turn against his dark nature and become an instrument for good, one who could restore balance and make sure the world didn't end, that he held it in tandem with his brother, and so long as they stood united, nothing could destroy the world or universe. Because Nick's father, Adarian, had seemed more vulnerable and human than any Malachi before him, Cody had thought he was the one it had spoken of. It was part of the reason she hadn't killed him when she'd had the chance, why she'd hesitated. But one look in Adarian's eyes as he mercilessly stabbed her while she'd been helpless before him, and she'd known better. Even though he could cleverly mimic compassion, Adarian had lacked all humanity, all decency. It wasn't until after that she'd learned Adarian Malachi had been the same soulless monster who had betrayed her uncle Seth and had left him in the hands of their enemy to be brutally tortured for centuries. Even though Seth had risked his life to free Adarian from their master, Adarian had gleefully sacrificed Seth for his own selfish gain. For that reason alone, she'd held no hope for Nick's humanity. Surely, the son would be even worse than the father, yet Nick had surprised her in every way. He was the one the tablet had predicted. She was even more sure of that now. No Malachi before him had been born of a human mother. None had known love. None had been capable of love. Not until Nick. He was nothing like the others. He alone could save them, if he didn't kill them first. Terrified to think about the fact that Nick would most likely stab and kill her in the future, she faced Suriel. In the past, he had adamantly refused to hear anything good about Nick. Like Srausha, he'd wanted the boy slaughtered before he ascended to his Malachi role. So, you believe me now? Biting his lip, he glanced away.
I never would have, had I not seen it with my own eyes.
Seen what?
Adarian Malachi sacrifice himself to save Charisse Gaucher and their son. Against everything, that rabid animal did love her, right to the end, even more than himself.
Yes, but he hadn't known how to show it. Adarian had single-handedly ruined Charisse's life and traumatized her. Instead of cherishing what he'd loved, he'd been abusive and mean. And that was no way to have a relationship with anyone. Marriage and friendship were built on trust and loyalty, not deceit and lies. Love could only be given. It could never be demanded. But in the end, Adarian had given every bit of his power to his son so that Nick could protect his mother at all costs. As Suriel had said, Adarian had loved Charisse completely. No Malachi before Adarian had ever placed the needs or welfare of anyone above himself. They were creatures of ultimate hatred and violence, of betrayal. Yet something in Adarian had changed when he met Charisse. And while Charisse hadn't been able to completely alter or tame the demonic beast that was Adarian, she had nurtured their son from Nick's very beginning. Her love and kindness, her personal sacrifice for him, kept Nick anchored to her. It overrode the innate congenital need in him to be cruel and violent, to lash out in hatred and destroy everyone near him, including himself. So long as Charisse remained alive, there was hope for Nick. He would do nothing to shame or harm his mother. But when she died, that would be the first step toward Nick's devolution into the Malachi. It was a path Cody intended to change, no matter the cost. Given Nick's heart and compassion, surely it could be done. No destiny is set by any birth, no matter how lowly or how high. All creatures have the right and ability to choose who and what they become, be it good or evil. She met Suriel's gaze. So you finally accept that Nick is the one the prophecy speaks of? He nodded.
No.
She scowled at his contradiction. Laughing, he let out a tired breath.
I want to believe it, too. But you yourself faced him centuries from now. You have seen firsthand what Nick will do if he's not stopped.
And I have seen a boy who is more than capable of defending himself, who had the powers of a Malachi at his command, allow a mere human to beat him to the brink of death because he made a promise to his mother to never fight again. What Malachi would ever do such? He glanced toward Adideron. Cody looked at the others. Her lips trembled from the weight of her painful emotions and memories. I know what it is that I'm asking of you. I do. And all of you know what I have lost in this battle already. And that included her sanity most days. What I stand to lose in the future if he's not stopped? Tears of grief filled her eyes as she relived the deaths of her family and friends at the hands of the Malachi and his demonic army. She had seen too many ripped apart and murdered, too many brutally slaughtered. It is not easy for me to find anything other than sheer hatred and contempt for the monster who will one day rob me of all I hold dear. There's not a being here who hates the Ambrose Malachi more than I do. Believe me, it's not possible. Yet, she broke off as her agony overwhelmed her. Angrily, she brushed away her tears and forced herself to continue. Her voice shook with the weight of her grim determination. Nick is not that beast. He is not a monster. Not yet. The boy he is deserves a chance to be saved.
And if you can't save him?
Vahista asked.
No one will suffer more than I assure you.
Cody held her breath as they exchanged looks with each other, and she waited for them to decide Nick's fate.
Nick Gaucher is worth it. I promise.
After a long, nerve-wracking minute, Suriel stepped forward to face the other Arlim.
We all know what is at stake. If we allow the others to kill Nick now, the Sada will definitely destroy the balance and end the universe for all creatures. There is nothing to stop that from happening. The balance can shift from one side to the other, but one side can never be fully destroyed. All of us have sworn to maintain the order and to observe that balance in all its incarnations. If there is a single chance of saving the universe, we have to fight for it, united. That is the oath we're sworn to. And we will die upholding it.
Cody swallowed hard.
I hope it doesn't come to that.
So do we,
Adidiran said, under his breath. Suriel ignored him.
Are we in accord?
One by one, they inclined their heads to him and re-swore their oaths of loyalty. Relieved that she wouldn't have to fight alone after all, Cody relaxed. Adidiran crossed his arms over his chest.
Tell us what you need, little sister.
A miracle.
But she didn't say that out loud. They knew that one as much as she did. So she focused on the more immediate concern. I need Nick return to his own body and his own time period. Each of them looked away, shamefaced. That was not a comforting reaction, and it most definitely wasn't the one she wanted to see. Dread hugged her close to its heart.
What?
Suriel cleared his throat.
We'll need the Major Stone to do that.
She'd never heard of such before. What is the Major Stone?
A very special piece of Libyan desert glass. It was formed when the first primal gods were at war. While fighting, Rezar hurled a piece of the sun at Braith. She deflected it, and it landed in the desert and made a stone that was as bright a yellow as the sun itself, perfectly smooth and round. It radiated the sun's brilliance. When the war was finally over, Rezar retrieved it from the desert, his domain, and had it set into a sun medallion that he gave to Braith as a peace offering.
Cody's jaw went slack as she realized something that had never occurred to her before. Is that why her symbol is a yellow sun and he's considered its protector? He nodded.
And while Rezar fashioned the necklace for her, he cut himself and bled into the stone that imbued it with some of Rezar's powers, including his ability to create chaos and split the dimensions and remove the soul from a body.
Cody winced. While she loved and adored her grandfather, she could choke him for that gift to his own enemy. Little had he known then that when he gave that power to Apollyme, she would one day use it against the human race to create the daemons who preyed on them. Where is it now? They all looked to Adidiran. She turned to face him. He shrugged helplessly.
The last person who had it was your mother. The goddess Apollyme gave it to her to celebrate your birth.
Scowling, Cody searched her memory for such a piece. Her mother had worn very little jewelry, only the necklace that bore her father's emblem and the sapphire wedding ring he'd given her in ancient Greece. I've never seen it. Are you sure about that?
Positive. I saw it on her myself on several occasions.
How weird that she had no recollection of this particular necklace at all, especially since it had passed through the hands of three people she knew extremely well. Suriel growled angrily.
Sraosha, or one of the others, must have found it somehow, or stolen it, and used it on the weakened Malachi. It is the only thing that makes sense.
A weird chill skipped down her back as a thought struck her. Would it have worked had Nick been at full strength? Adidiran laughed aloud.
No. At full strength, it would have been like throwing a grenade into a gas plant. As a descendant of Apollyme, the Malachi would have absorbed her powers and Rezar's out of it, but because his powers were bound to the point he was human,
it allowed them to pull him apart. She vanished for him.
Exactly.
She really wanted to beat herself for the stupidity of her actions. It had seemed so logical to bind Nick's powers so that those hunting him wouldn't be able to use his powers to locate him, to keep him from using them and accidentally harming himself or others. But in the end, it had been the worst solution.
Let it go.
It was useless to continue reliving the event and beating herself up over it. There was no way to change what had already been done. She needed her full attention on finding another solution, one that might actually work. "How do I locate the stone?" she asked them. Adidaron shook his head.
"No idea."
Sighing, she patted Adidaron's cheek. "You really don't believe in making my job easy, do you?"
"Where's the fun in that?"
She laughed, bitterly. "Can I ask one favor?"
"Feel free to ask, but the answer might be no."
Of course it might. There were times when they really made her want to throw her hands up and cower in a corner. "Can you get Simi into this dimension to help us?"
"Simi? The Caronte?"
He scowled.
"Why?"
"Because if the stone belonged to Apollyme, my little horned cousin will know it, and she'll be able to sniff it out like a blood demon. It's a sparkly yum-yum, after all." And there was nothing Simi loved more than sparkly yum-yums. Suriel and Adidaron exchanged a look she couldn't quite discern.
"We will try,"
Suriel said after a pause.
"But Simi has to agree to do it. We can't cross dimensions with her if she fights us."
That was a major understatement. No one other than Asheron made Simi do anything she didn't want to do. Well, except for Simi's husband. For some reason, he'd always had more control over her than Asheron did. Something her father had told her had both irritated and amused Asheron. Cody had always found it charming, and that made her miss her aunt and uncle all the more.
"Please let Simi come here."
Simi would make this task much easier, at least for Cody. For the one sent to ask Simi to join her for the fight. "Word of advice," Cody said to the men. "If Simi breaks out her barbecue sauce, run." Suriel snorted.
"Thanks."
"Anytime, sport." Cody bit her lip as she scanned the faces of her co-conspirators. By going against Raosha and saving her from the guillotine, they had all committed treason against their brethren. If she failed, they would pay a steep price for it. Adidaron gently took her arm.
"Remember, Sarosha and the others will be searching for both of you. Every time you use your powers outside of this shelter, they will know it. We do have several spies among his army, but don't count on them to be able to rescue you if you're found again."
"I understand." She was used to being on her own, in both lifetimes. Suriel inclined his head to her.
"Keep Nick alive."
"I'll do my best, but we only have 2 days to finish this before the Usumgalu unites and they march on the world with or without their general."
"Yeah, we know. Thorn is already gathering his forces here."
Cody shivered. "Is Cadogan with him?"
"Who?"
Suriel asked. "Cadogan. He was once Thorn's right hand, at least in my world." One by one, they all shook their heads.
"We don't know that name."
Strange, but she would go with it. Though it didn't happen often, there were a number of supernatural beings she knew that they didn't. Mostly ones who didn't interact with the human world any more than they had to. And that definitely described the two of them. Thorn and Cadogan together had been an invincible team. Honestly, she was more than happy to not face their united strength in a fight here. She and Nick had enough against them already.
"Good luck with Simi,"
she breathed to them, then teleported back to Asheron's house. Cody had barely appeared in his office before she saw Asheron staring at an old photo with a longing in his eyes that was heart-wrenching. She knew that aching loss firsthand, and it reeked. The woman in the photo was his daughter, Katra, who was holding two children Cody assumed to be the Simi and Ash Nick had spoken about. But the man in that photo was definitely not the same as the Sumerian god Katra had married in Cody's world. The love Asheron bore for his daughter and grandchildren, though, was every bit as potent. Asheron? Clearing his throat, he turned slightly toward her and put the photo out of sight.
Did you learn anything helpful?
Yes and no. It's as I suspected. My boss wants Nick dead. Asheron snorted.
Having spent time with him, I can well understand his motivation.
Cody tisked at him, but didn't comment on that. They told me about a Magus stone. Have you ever heard of it? He put his hands in his jacket pocket.
Vaguely. It's a legend about the first war of the gods, and one of them threw down a bit of the sun at another one or something like that. Honestly, I never paid those stories much attention.
Does the stone exist in this realm? He shrugged.
If it did, it went missing a long time ago.
Of course it did, because nothing could ever go easy for her. It never had. As her father so often said, there were those who were born to be great, and those who were determined to be great. And those who were determined were the ones life challenged the hardest.
Rise to the occasion, my daughter. Never let anyone tell you that you lack courage or conviction to see your tasks done. The only opinion that really matters is your own. And you are a creature of absolute beauty and strength through and through. Never, ever forget that. So, in the midst of the storm, stand proud against it. Lift up your middle finger and defy the fates with everything you have. If they want to fight, bring it. You have more than enough intelligence and skill to battle them until they beg you for mercy.
Gods? How she missed her father. The fire and spirit in his eyes that nothing could daunt. It was infectious. Just like Ari's. Knowing better than to let her thoughts linger on her family, especially when she stood this close to her father's identical twin, Cody cleared her throat. Shall we rejoin the others? Before she could answer, something hard slammed against the walls. It reminded her of a battering ram. She covered her ears to shield them from the noise. What is that? Asheron's face paled.
In short, our deaths.
Chapter 14. While all calamity broke loose on New Orleans, Nick strapped on a Kevlar vest. Across the room from him, Mark and Bubba armed themselves with crossbows and throwing knives and other things Nick was sure he didn't want to know about. In the event he was arrested for being with them, he wanted plausible deniability. His mom watched him in awe. You look like you've done this a few times. Nick smiled as he finished up. Just a few. At home, Caleb's always terrified I'll get eaten and he'll have to face my mother's wrath over it. She wrinkled her nose at him. Am I that different there? Nick hesitated as he thought it over. Not really. You just dress in more expensive clothes here than the mom I'm used to, and I'm way too close to your height here. Hey, Mike, you there? Scowling, Nick turned toward Mark and Bubba, who both groaned at the thick Tennessee drawl over their radio. Who's that? He asked his mom. She growled low in the back of her throat. Someone I hope gets eaten by the demons. She winked playfully at Nick. With a painful sound of resignation, Bubba picked up the radio and answered the call.
Yeah, Toph. What can I do you for?
You and Mark anywhere near it, TV?
Mark went to turn it on.
What channel?
Bubba asked into the radio.
Don't think it's gonna matter much. Sure it's on all stations by now.
No sooner had the unknown Toph spoken than the TV screen showed a horrific scene in the city. Nick's jaw dropped as he stepped closer to the screen. It looked just like something out of his recent nightmares or from the Great Norland's fire of 1788 that had destroyed almost every structure in town. Buildings were ablaze all over the quarter, while winged demons and daemons openly preyed on the hapless humans who'd made the mistake of not taking shelter. National Guard soldiers and police had been mobilized, but it made little difference. The innocent humans in uniform only became more targets for the non-human predators. Savitar entered the room and cursed as he saw it, too. He cut his eyes toward Nick.
Looks like Thorn is seething that you got away, kid.
Nick was even more aghast. Are you saying all that's because of me? Savitar nodded. Sick to his stomach, Nick turned away from the TV. I can't let this happen.
What are you going to do? Savitar asked sarcastically. Spill your guts on their shoes? Hate to break it to you, kid, but that really is all you can do without your powers to fight them.
Mark agreed.
You go out there and there won't be anything left of you but a stain in the cracks of the pavement.
Nick wanted to growl a denial at them both, but he knew it was the truth. In this incarnation, he was as useful as tears to a warthog.
I've never been more worthless.
And that was saying something. His gaze went to the photos that his mom had placed all over the bookshelves in front of him. They showed a boy Nick didn't know, and it wasn't just because the two of them didn't favor physically. The boy in those photos had never been forced to swallow air in an attempt to make his stomach feel full because he had nothing to eat. That boy had never walked his mom home from work at 3 a.m. on a school night trying to keep her safe from predators, human and otherwise. He'd never been forced to use Bubba's duct tape to hold his shoes together because he couldn't afford another pair. And he'd never had to fight for his life against those who wanted to end it. Part of Nick envied that boy, that normality, that innocence and happiness. He couldn't imagine growing up in a world with a pantry stock full of food and snacks, having parents to check his homework, go to games he played in, or make sure he'd had a good dinner at a reasonable hour. But all that being said, he strangely missed his real life, and he definitely missed the people in it. Even Mark's duck urine cologne. Savitar waved his hand in front of Nick's face.
Are you in a coma?
Nick shook his head. Just thinking.
You think any harder and your head might explode.
He snorted at Savitar's teasing and ignored it. Zerelda had told him that he still had his Malachi powers, that no one could take them from him. So how could he activate them? The believing part hadn't been real conducive to getting them back, and it was so frustrating to know that he'd had those powers at one time, and now... He flinched at the live feed of a patrol car being blasted so hard by a demon that it caused the car to launch into the air, roll, and then land upside down in the middle of the street, right in front of Jack's brewery. A red, fortified pickup with black roll bars and hunting lights went streaking by the overturned patrol car as someone from inside it launched Molotov cocktails into the air at the demons.
Topher, Bubba snapped. Is that your ignorant hide I'm looking at on TV?
Am I on TV? Daddy, hear that? I'm famous.
All of a sudden, a man, who reminded Nick a lot of the Bubba he knew from home, stuck his head out of the truck and waved at the news helicopter that was now trailing after them. Bubba growled in the back of his throat.
Son, stick your head back in before you lose it, and tell Big Topher to take his belt to you for being stupid.
Big Topher? Nick repeated to Mark. A pained expression lined Mark's face.
Big Topher is Michael's uncle, Little Topher is his cousin.
He gestured toward the television.
That special moron who's still waving at the camera.
Nick rubbed his head in agony of that man's particular level of idiocy. Do I want to know what kind of person names their child Little Topher? Mark laughed. Probably not, but Christopher was great-granddaddy. He went by Chris until he had a son who was named after him. So he was Big Chris, and son was Little Chris. When Little Chris had a son, he named him after his daddy, but to keep from getting everyone confused, he called him Topher. Then Topher found someone desperate enough to marry him. My vote still says he must have hit her too hard on the head before he dragged her into his cave, but anyway, he named his son after his father, and so Little Topher entered the world.
And was promptly dropped on his head by his mother, who was